And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the lights, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Root and the Flower, was written by Virginia Mesa and will be narrated by Arnold Moss. It is the sixth in a series of 15 outstanding programs originally presented on The Eternal Light, recreated now to mark the Eternal Light's 15th year of broadcasting.
Yankee Doodle went to town a-riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni.
Some folks say that way back before the Revolution, British soldiers made up Yankee Doodle to poke fun at the Americans. Now, this is the way they tell it. A certain Thomas Fitch of Norwalk, Connecticut, a captain in the American Army, was leading his troops out to fight the Indians. His daughter, Elizabeth, was scandalized at the outlandish assortment of rags and tags they were wearing and calling uniforms. Just like a woman, she ran into the barnyard and grabbed up a handful of chicken feathers. Soldiers have to have plumes, she said.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle dandy. Mind the music and the steppin' with the gals be handy.
Now, I can't prove it to you, but that's what they say. Anyway, the name stuck. And today, whatever we call ourselves, Yankee Doodle is part of our heritage. Maybe our folks landed at Plymouth Rock. Maybe it was Ellis Island. But New England is the way we came. Josh Billings could have been talking about any of us when he described a real live Yankee.
A real live Yankee is full of character and sizzling hot with enterprise. He looks at the pyramid, calculates its height and weight, and wonders how he can sell it for a profit in Boston.
He loves liberty with a red pepper enthusiasm and believes New England can whip the universe.
He's as chock full of opinions as a puddin' is raisins. He keeps his finger in every pie, even the workings of Providence.
Like Uncle Isri, who once prayed for rain. Oh, Lord, we need rain bad. Send us rain. But mind you, what we want is a drizzling, drozzling, sozzling rain. We don't want any ripping, rearing, tearing rain that'll harrow up the face of nature. We want rain, but not a flood. You hear?
Cocky, callow, wily, opinionated, lovable, the Yankee of song and story. This is our heritage, our national character. We are Yankee Doodle, Ethan Allen, Daniel Webster, P.T. Barnum, Uncle Sam, rolled into one. But if this is one side of our collective face, there is another, a sober one. Deeper go our roots than Yankee Doodle.
What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou thinkest of him? Yet thou hast made him but little lower. Thou hast made him a little lower than the angels.
This is our heritage, too. Our founding fathers brought it with them. The wisdom of another breed of men, another climate. They were a God-driven people. They lived by the Ten Commandments. God had made them in his image. They believed, and nothing could come between them and God. Like the Israelites of old, they defied a king, and with the Bible as a rudder, set sail to found a new world. 102 men and women. This is our beginning as Americans yours and mine. 102 men and women in a book that few of them could read. And when a settlement took shape, it was to this book that they turned for the law and order that kept them from anarchy that first howling winter.
The Lord's song, how sing shall we within a foreign people's land? Jerusalem, if I do thee forget, forget, let my right hand cleave, let my tongue to my palate. If I do not in mind thee bear, if I, Jerusalem, do not above my chiefest joy prefer.
It's true. Few of our pilgrim fathers could read the Bible. But in the strangeness and the wildness all around them, it was the one familiar thing. It became the loom upon which they spun out their daily lives. They even wove it into the nursery rhymes they sang their children.
Young Obadiah, David, Josiah, all were pious. God is great, God is good, so always do what he thinks you should.
Yes, into nursery rhymes, and into the laws that you and I are happy to live by today.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Chair recognizes the member from Massachusetts.
Gentlemen, we have before us for ratification by members of this Congress that document entitled A Declaration of Independence. I would make but one suggestion as to a change in the document as it now stands. Will you please refer to the last sentence of the declaration beginning, "And for support of this declaration, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Gentlemen, in the light of our heritage and our habits, I would add to this sentence the single phrase, "with a firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence."
With a firm reliance upon the protection of divine providence, we pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Now, mind you, I'm not forgetting the bad things. The whipping post, the pillory, the hangings. All done in the name of God. But one thing saved us. Our deep-rooted belief in the supreme rights of the individual. The Puritans had talked back to the King of England when he abused this right. And in the same spirit, men like Roger Williams talked back to the Puritans.
Lord, brethren of the court, you ask me whether I will renounce my beliefs. I will not. I go further. I say that any law you may pass which tells a man what to believe is against God's law. Man's conscience does not come under your law, but under heaven's.
Who today remembers the names of his judges? This is what we remember. We remember the Rhode Island colony that Roger Williams founded and the tough and stubborn roots of freedom he planted there. We remember that it was there at Newport that the Jews, living descendants of the ancient Israelites, escaping from persecution, found a home. It was there that they founded a synagogue, loved, married, bore children, died, and were buried. 200 years later, the poet Longfellow saw their gravestones and put into poetry what he felt.
The very names recorded here are strange, of foreign accent and of different clime. Alvarez and Rivera interchange with Abraham and Jacob of old time.
But long before Longfellow, a sweeter epitaph had been written for these Newport Jews. A man named Ezra Stiles, while serving as the president of Yale University, had written their language, Hebrew, into the curriculum. More than that, the earliest laws of the New Haven colony acknowledged its Hebraic legacy.
In the beginning of the foundation of this plantation, it was agreed, concluded, and settled as a fundamental law that the judicial laws of God, as they were delivered by Moses and expounded by the Scripture, shall be a constant direction for all proceedings here and a general rule for all courts.
This is our heritage. We are Yankee Doodle, Roger Williams, John Alden, the Newport Jews, all in one. Whatever we call ourselves, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Irish, Polish, Negro, Yankee, we came this way. The habits, the values, the laws, the language, planted so long ago in one small corner of the globe, New England, were to infect a nation. Some folks say it was the Yankee peddler that carried New England to the rest of the country. Anyway, as soon as there were roads to walk along, there was the peddler, pack on his back, hawking the handiwork of his spinning, weaving, whittling, contriving, swapping kinsmen.
How much you want for that bay mare, Silas?
Well, now, I figure $15.
Well, say, that's mighty cheap. Anything wrong with the mare?
I won't lie to you. That mare, she's got a good mouth. Legs is all right. Nice color, clever as a heap. But she's got two faults, and I don't like her.
What are the faults, Silas?
I'll be fair with you. I'll tell you one fault before we trade and the other after.
That sounds fair enough. What's the first fault?
Well, she's a little hard to catch.
Well, that don't make no matter to me. What's the second fault?
No, I said after we trade. Let me see your money.
Here it is. Now, what's the second fault?
It's a deal now. You're sure?
I'm sure.
Well, I'll tell you. She's hard to catch, and she ain't good for nothing when you catch her.
There was a frog lived in a spring. Sing song, Patty, won't you claim me, oh. Had such a cold he couldn't sing. Sing song, Patty, won't you claim me, oh.
No one was ever like him, the fabulous Yankee peddler. He was made for all situations and places. He sold salmon from the Kennebec to the people of Charleston, ice from Walden's Pond to the West Indies. Ready to start for Timbuktu tomorrow morning, he was missionary to his country and factotum to the world.
Kymo Carol, Delta Carol, Kymo Carol, Kymo, Scrim, Scrum, Papa Diddle, there by the rigadum, rigadum, bottom in the Kymeo.
But if the Yankee peddler palming off his wooden nutmegs brought New England to the country also caught the New England conscience. Out of our Puritan pioneers has come our ceaseless search for a moral meaning to life, our relentless grappling with good and evil. Melville symbolized it in his white whale, Moby Dick, Hawthorne in the Scarlet Letter. But there were others too, for in New England in the middle of the 19th century, there burst forth such a flowering as the world has seldom seen. There was Emerson, plunging like a diver into his own soul to sound its depths.
I see not any road of perfect peace a man can walk but after the counsel of his own bosom. Our faith comes in moments. Our vice is habitual. Yet there is a depth in those brief moments which constrains us to ascribe more reality to them than to all other experiences. A man is the facade of a temple wherein all wisdom and all good abide. When the soul breathes through our intellect, it is genius. When it breathes through our will, it is virtue. When it flows through our affection, it is love. Men of character are the conscience of the society to which they belong. The life of man is the true romance. All around us, what powers are wrapped up under the coarse mattings of custom. It is so wonderful to our neurologists that a man can see without his eyes that it does not occur to them that it is just as wonderful that he should see with them. And that is ever the difference between the wise and the unwise. The latter wonders at what is unusual. The wise man wonders at the usual.
Preacher, teacher, poet, scholar, sage, Emerson was the yeast in the ferment of his time. And his mark was upon all the others. Alcott, Margaret Fuller, Channing, Holmes, Dana, Lowell, Beecher. Most of all, his mark was upon his cranky, self-sufficient neighbor, Henry David Thoreau. One windy March, Thoreau borrowed Bronson Alcott's axe and chopped down some pine trees. He returned the axe, making sure it was sharper than he'd found it. And then he built himself a hut on Walden Pond in Concord and sat down to write a book. No fancy title, just plain Walden, he called it.
I would rather sit on a pumpkin and have it to myself than be crowded on a velvet cushion. The masses of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. To drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. And if it proved mean, why then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it. Or if it were sublime, to know it by my experience and be able to give a true account of it in my next excursion. This I have learned by my experiment. If a man advances confidently in the direction of his dreams, to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in his common hours. For man does not keep pace with his companions. Perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away.
Thoreau stepped to the music that he heard. And so doing, he left his imprint on us and on the world. On one occasion, he refused to pay his taxes to a government that tolerated slavery. They came to get him.
I'm sorry, Henry, but you'll have to come along. You better get your hat.
You know, I haven't got a hat, John.
Well, then, come along like you are. That's a nice bean field you got there.
Mm. What you going to do with me, John?
Lock you up, I reckon.
Then I'd better put out the fire. My dinner's cooking.
Take your time. They told me to bring you in. They didn't say when.
Then I'll fetch my notebook and a pencil.
Thoreau spent one night in Concord jail, and that was the night he began his famous essay on civil disobedience. They say John Brown read it before he left for Harper's Ferry. A century later, it was read, too, by a wizened little man across the world, Mahatma Gandhi. Maybe it helped to set India free. Up this way, they tell another story about Thoreau. Maybe it's true, maybe not, but it sounds like him. When he lay dying, his friends and relatives crowded round his bedside. One of the good brethren of Concord was worried about his soul.
Henry, I don't mean to be impertinent, but have you made your peace with God?
I wasn't aware, Joshua, that he and I had ever quarreled.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me.
Out of the flowering of New England, out of the knotty roots of our beginnings, came poetry, too. Longfellow, Whittier, Lowell, Holmes, and Emily Dickinson, the amorous spinster, weaving her songs out of her loneliness and her inward visions.
I never saw a moor. I never saw the sea. Yet know I now how heather looks and what a wave must be. I never spoke with God, nor visited in heaven. Yet certain am I of the spot, as if a chart were given.
Today, in our time of trial and search, the tradition lives on in other voices. It lives on in a New England schoolteacher, farmer, poet, Robert Frost.
They cannot scare with their empty spaces between stars, or stars void of human races. I have it in me so much nearer home to scare myself with my own desert places.
What is man that thou art mindful of him?
The tradition lives on, too, in our language and in our laws, our habits and our values. And in our consciences, too, whatever we call ourselves. Here in New England is both the root and the flower. Whether our ancestors landed at Plymouth Rock or Ellis Island, here is our spiritual homeland, the way we came.
For thou hast made him but little lower. Thou hast made him little lower than angels.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Irving Engel of New York, president of the American Jewish Committee and a prominent civic leader. Mr. Engel.
We have just heard an interpretation of the ideals in which our free society is rooted. This reminds us anew how closely intertwined are the teachings of the Old Testament and the aspirations of American democracy. The Root and the Flower has restated freshly this truth, that our most cherished principles of individual freedom and human dignity are grounded in those teachings. The flower, it seems to me, is a particularly fitting symbol of democracy. For democracy blooms in the soil of freedom, in a climate of warm understanding among citizens of all races, creeds, and national origins. However, democracy needs diligent protection from the destructive winds of ignorance, superstition, and bigotry. When some Americans suffer injustice or discrimination because of color, religion, or ancestry, we are striking down our country's most vital concept, that all men are endowed by their Creator with equal rights. The past 50 years have seen accelerated efforts to eliminate bigotry from the American scene. Working with men of all faiths, our goal has been to help translate the ideal of human equality, with its origins deep in the Bible, into modern life and democratic practices. The American Jewish Committee is glad to salute the Jewish Theological Seminary of America on the happy occasion of the 15th anniversary of its Eternal Light program. The Root and the Flower is but one of a long series of distinguished programs linking the ancient verities of the Bible with the realities of today's world. It is our hope that these inspiring interpretations of the traditions and precepts of Judaism will long continue to advance throughout the land among Americans of all faiths, better understanding of one another,